On the way to work, actually, between jobs.
I don't, where is he working? He was working in a big deal.
I was working in Beit Shemesh, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, big deal's closing, right?
The movie, Ryan Park.
Oh.
Wait a minute.
Elliot, we hope you passed your test.
Well, they didn't say I flunked it, so I guess I passed it.
You're muted.
Don't have to do it over.
I hear that again.
I can jump one of those in front of you.
What are you talking about? Covered races.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Elliot, you're muted, so whatever you said, we missed it.
Oh,
but welcome. Welcome back to Masechet Kiddushin. We're on Daf. Mem Tet Amud Bet 49B.
You hear me now?
We got interrupted. We got interrupted last week. Wait, let's just finish up this last Braita before the Mishnah. It's about 7 lines from the bottom of the 7 lines from before the Mishnah towards the bottom. The first word on the line is shezachta lilmod velo zachta lilamed, period. That was about the difference between Bavel and Elam. Now, asara, this was this list of asara kabim yordu, 10 measures of some virtue come to the world, and 9 go to one place, and it's full of all different types of prejudicial statements about different nationalities. Asara kabim, didn't somebody do homework about, you know, like how it became that, you know, these jokes are told about those people and those two? I count on you usually for these types of things. You had a busy week. Now he's a grandfather. He's not functioning on all. He's busy posting pictures of those grandchildren. Asara kabim gvura. 10 measures of strength, of might. Yardula olam. Tisha natlu parsim. The Gemara in a few places mentions this idea that the Persians, those Iranians, with their missiles, the maximum, the 10 measures of Gvura went to the Persians. The Gemara thought it was remarkable, the idea that like Persia was considered like a backwater or something. But yet they also had an empire.
They fought against the Romans, so the Jews didn't have anything.
The idea that anybody would take on the Romans was unimaginable.
Well, they were not a backwater. Before their war with the Greeks, they were the empire, and Greeks were the underdogs.
Okay, so the Persians
and Rome wasn't even.
So the Persians got 9/10. Asara kabim kinim, yardu l'olam. 10 measures of lice. 9 of them went into my daughter's heads. No, that's not where they went. They went to Tisha natlu madai. Okay, that's a kind of derogatory statement about the Medeans. Asara kabin kshafim yardul olam tisha natlu Mitzrayim. Okay, that we can understand. We understand the image of Mitzrayim being full of kishuf, witchcraft, you know, turning. Well, you know, I would say we all saw the Prince of Egypt, but or the Ten Commandments. But the idea of the Khartoumim doing their witchcraft.
I read the book.
Asara kabin nigoim yardul olam. 10 measures of yucky diseases, nigoim of afflictions, right? You know, the kind with the pus and with the bruises, and
that's enough. We just said no.
9 of them went to the chazirim. Pigs can now. Okay. You don't need an excuse for a Jew to say something nasty about a pig. I mean, everybody knows that the pig is the epitome of treif, of non-kosher. Azir. Pig's not more non-kosher than eating chalis dog. But pigs are somehow the symbols of non-kosher. But what's interesting about that? Like within this long list that we've had. What? It's not a nation. It's not a people. What?
It's not even a people.
It's not even a people. So the Ritva says that this is a self-censoring. That the,
it meant itself.
It meant Rome. Uh-huh. It meant Rome. Uh-huh. But Lo Naim, you can't say that about... There was something...
It's also going to be to...
I mean, or maybe it was censored afterwards.
Testing.
But
or it was considered Christian immoral.
Right,
right, that's probably
right. It's interesting that, you know, this idea that like there's certain things Jews didn't say out loud. And there might even be self-censoring, but yet, you know, people knew. Someone I know of an older generation, you know, sometimes people of an older generation don't have all the same political. Are you cold? Do you want to turn the heat on?
Me?
Yeah.
Because
you look like you have mittens on. I mean, you look like. So if people are cold, somebody put the heat on. You know, sometimes people of an older generation, they're either not quite as politically sensitive as current generation, just as we won't be when we get old. Or they just don't care. So someone told me, this is an older gentleman told me that his father, that he was once on the trolley in Brooklyn, and Brooklyn still had trolleys.
Yeah.
And his father referred to what we today politically correctly refer to as a African-American. And he referred to him as, speaking Yiddish, a bluya. A blue person. Because, in other words, it was a euphemism for a euphemism. Yellower. Yellow, yeah. But he called him a blue, instead of calling the nasty word, which today is not so PC, schwarze, right? Which is not a proper word to say. They use all types of words in movies.
In a movie with, I forget who it was, the sheriff came into town.
Blazing Saddles. Yes, well, a lot's changed since 1973 when Mel Brooks made Blazing Saddles. Blazing Saddles couldn't be today. And I'm as big a fan of Mel Brooks.
It wasn't such a nice word then either.
I could do you a chapter and verse on that. We could have a sheer daf yomi on Blazing Saddles. Make a scene about Blazing Saddles, move on to Young Frankenstein, and then to High Anxiety. And anyway, but he couldn't say.
The real word.
He couldn't say that word with a shin, so he said bluya. Mm-hmm. So his son said to him, "Tate, why can't you say the word with a shin? You're talking in Yiddish anyway." So he said, "Ah, they all understand." all the African Americans on the trolley in Brooklyn in 1940, whatever, they also understood. So there's a sense of like Jews is like self-censor, right? But not so much here. In other words, that was part of like the, in other words, sovereignty brought with it the idea that we don't have to censor ourselves.
Here is in Israel.
Here in Israel. And that's not always, there's an interview, I'm about to publish it in England, in an English translation. In the 60s, Agnon gave an interview to Geula Cohen, you know, who was, then she was a reporter from Ma'ariv, but she went on to, you know, become a Chaveret Knesset, the mother of Tzachi Hanegbi. She was an underground radio broadcaster in the Etzel. So she had a column in Ma'ariv called Shulchan Miruba. And it was like a symposium. Every week she would put forth a set of questions to, like, you know, public figures. And they would answer and she would report on what they said. So there was one column where she asked a bunch of people about, you know, like, how do we feel about like a Jewish army, about the IDF? You know? And how do we feel about what people were then talking about? This was before the Six-Day War, about the cult of power, you know, which was a foreign thing to, you know, the Jewish mentality before we became Am Chofshi Be'aretzenu. So the people that were interviewed was the then newly minted, freshly minted Ramatkal, Yitzhak Rabin. He had just become Ramatkal, I think, that month. Professor Norton Rottenstreich, who was a very significant philosopher. Moshe Una, who was a Chaver Knesset from the Mafdal and from Steliau, and Agnon. So Agnon says that he wonders, he doesn't say fears, he wonders that if after 2,000 years of not picking up a sword, the Jewish people will now pick it up with a little too much fervor. And then he says that he's not so into like all the militaristic aspects of the army, you know, like the showing off, like the matasan Yom Ha'atzmaut and saber rattling and other things like that. But then he says in an aside, I would never say such a thing about a Goyish army, right? In other words, in Chutz Laaretz, a Jew wouldn't say such a thing about, like, a Jewish citizen of a patriotic, loyal German Jew in the time of World War I. You know, when Jews served on behalf of the fatherland in greater numbers than any other religious or ethnic minority. No Jew would say something disparaging about the German army because you have to show your patriotism. Here, maybe not this month, but here part of patriotism is, what's the most patriotic thing you do here? You complain.
There was I don't know there was a famous Haredi Rosh Hashanah. Somebody was coming to him and he was talking about people who were protesting against the government or whatever it was. And he called them Tzionim, and they said, "What do you mean we're Tzionim?" He said, "You wouldn't do this with Chutz Laaretz."
Yes, no. He said, "He said you're a Tzioni." Right, exactly. So who was that? It was
Rav Kahneman or
Yeah, exactly. To criticize for a Haredi to criticize the government is the most Tzionish thing of all, because it shows that you feel that your existence here it's qualitatively different than it was in Poland. Or in Germany, or wherever you were, where Jews always had to be more patriotic than anyone. Okay, anyway, that's a side point. So here, so Mistama, this is talking about Rome. Not nice. So we disguise it as saying Chazirim. Wasn't like a wild boar a symbol of
one of the legions?
One of the legions. Asarak habin znut yardu leolam tisha natlu Aravia. Arabia took 9/10 of the what's a nice word for znut? Immodesty. Licentiousness. Greeks. Asarak habin azut yardu leolam. Rashi says that azut is mamzerut. You see Rashi? Rashi says like azut, brazenness is either brazenness leads to mamzerut, you know, because it leads people to have improper sexual relations, and from that mamzerim are born, or just brazenness, you know, chutzpah, yardu le'olam.
He meant it like we when what we mean when we say he's a mamzer.
Oh, you mean mamzer? I mean, I don't know. I think that's more of a Yiddishism. I'm not sure.
Who knows how he might have spoken Yiddish?
Rashi did not speak Yiddish. So 9 measures of azut were given to Meshan. Meshan is, it's like, where is it? It's like near Iran.
The title says it's near Bavel, but
I think it's like near Iran today, between Iran and Iraq. Someplace else in Kiddushin it talks about Meshan. Asarak kabin sicha, this is the most problematic of all. 10 measures of chattiness, of conversation came to the world, and women took 9 of them. All right, that's Sharon, do you want to respond? You're rolling your eyes.
That
makes sense.
Not a nation.
What? So it's also interesting. Women are also not a nation.
But they are human.
All different types of things. There was a cartoon in the New Yorker of a fish, you know, like crawling out of the water up onto the dry land. And the wife fish is still in the water with its head sticking out, saying to the husband fish who's crawling up onto dry land, "Don't walk away from me when I'm talking to you." And the caption was, you know, how evolution really started. All right, that's not so nice. Sharon's biting her tongue.
I spent 4 years as a social worker.
Yeah. What kind of people online here, Achituv?
Social worker, a social when the social workers union would have its annual gathering. Okay, so there were about 2,500 people in Bina Uma at these at the beginning of the gathering. 90% were women. Okay, which was
I mean, there are many more female social workers.
90% of the social workers in Israel are women.
Certain people, certain professions.
And
so 10 measures of social work fell to the world and 9 of them were
and the speakers at on the dais up there would start speaking and you couldn't hear what they were saying.
Why?
Because
we're talking to the audience.
Because 20 over 2,000 women were talking.
Well, like you come to shul, I'm not saying in Mishkan Sipora, but in a Jewish synagogue, sometimes there's chit-chatting and not with God.
It's the men took more in shul than the women do, actually.
Whatever this means, we needn't explain it. Asara kabin shichrut yadu, 10 measures of drunkenness, tisha natlu kushim, an African nation. Asara kabin shena yardu la'olam, tisha natlu avadim, sleep. Slaves took 9 measures of sleep, because slavery is exhausting. Now, it's in a world where there were slaves.
Yeah, because not only that, it's because a slave has no interest in doing anything.
Right.
It's not for himself.
Right. In other words, that image of in African slavery in America of the slaves being always blamed for being lazy is outrageous, right? Lazy. You have zero motivation aside from keeping the skin on your back, attached to your back, is your only motive for work. That's like a real incentive to work with a lot of vim and vigor. Not so much.
Question.
Talk
about in every employee, you have to give them like more sleep than what you get.
So this might not be talking about every every.
No, maybe that might have got like you could give the sleep the same mind.
Yeah. Okay, that's the end of that part. Look at the Mishnah. Now, this Mishnah, we've referred to it because it connects to the previous Mishnah. These tenaim, these conditions made in kiddushin, and so we've referred ahead to it. And now this is the home address. Harayat mikudeshet li .. al menat shani kohen v'nimtza Levi v'nimtza kohen. It's a long list of things, right? It's a long list of things. Skip ahead to the last line of the Mishnah. In all of them, enam mikudeshet. Right? And as all of these things would invalidate the Kiddushin if they were made, not like David's case, where he said he was a Kohen and it turned out he was a Levi, because that was not a condition in their marriage. It was a mistake. Right? But it wasn't a condition, I hope. But if you had said, I marry you on the condition that I am a Kohen, and it turns out not to be the case.
How do you define the word nimson? It was found out?
Yeah. It was revealed. How did you find out that you weren't a Kohen? How did I find out?
But I'm saying that you're saying you're a Kohen. And
it doesn't the implication isn't that he deceived her. He may have been mistaken.
It turns out.
Right?
Good question.
I found out.
Lomishane, it doesn't matter. In other words, they were married on the condition that he's X, and that at a certain point, Mitbarer, that is not X, right? Either because he deceived her or because he was, it happens all the time. We've told this story around this table too many times to have to repeat it. There are people who were Kohanim that thought they were Kohanim, turned out they're Levium. I was a Levi, turned out I'm a Yisrael. There's another fellow in the neighborhood who was a Yisrael, discovered he's a Kohen. It happens all the time. So, Almanach, any Kohen, Venimtsa Levi, Levi, Venimtsa Kohen, Natin, Venimtsa Mamzer. Natin is what we call a Gibonite. But the Gibonim, they converted, but it seemed to have been an insincere conversion. Well, it was a improper
under false pretenses.
Under false pretenses, or it was a falsely entered into because while they were converting, they were still worshiping idols, and they continued to do so. So Chazal said, for certain things, we don't treat them like full Jews. And Chazal said they can't marry a regular normative a Jew with normative yichus. But they can marry a mamzer, or they can marry each other, or things like that. So they were kind of like in the liminal space of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism. Liminal? In the middle, in the twilight zone.
Were they allowed to convert fully?
I think so. I think a Givoni who wanted to become a proper Jew was able to convert. It wasn't like the nations that aren't allowed to convert. So they're called in rabbinic literature they're called a natin. So he says he's a mamzer, or he's a mamzer, and it turns out that he's a natin. Right. In other words, hariat mikudeshetli on the condition that who would want to, what kind of calling card is that for the shatchin to say that I'm a mamzer?
She's a mamzeret.
She's looking, right? Right. So there, you know, there are shadchani, you know, there are sadly, although we do everything we can to try to avoid it and to retroactively figure out a way to get rid of it, there are in fact mamzerim in the world. And, you know, if they are halakhically committed and want to get married, they're in a bit of a pickle.
They can marry gerim.
They can marry gerim.
They can marry
gerim. Or another mamzer.
I was wondering if you...
There's shadchanim that specialize. What?
The progeny can marry no.
No.
If a mamzer marries a mamzer, then the kid's mamzer. What happens to the kids?
They carry the mamzerut.
I thought that they can get out of it somehow.
No.
Before you marry a kid.
No.
Slave?
No. Well, they don't have a slave.
They marry a kid. They're also the kids of
mamzer. Anyway. There are shadchanim. I don't know them personally. There are shadchanim that specialize in this boutique. Yeah.
It's a niche.
It's a small market. No, it's nothing to laugh about. It's a tragedy. It is a human tragedy. It's a
small market.
Yeah. Ben Ir Venimtsa Ben Krach. He says he's a villager. It turns out he lives on Park Avenue. Oh, Olafet, then Krach Venimsa, Shuben Ir, Almanatche Beiti, Karov Lemerchatz, on the condition that my house is near the bathhouse, which might mean that, you know, you're going to marry somebody who's going to smell good. Or, Rachok Venimsa Karov. Or he says, marry me on the condition that I live far away from the bath. Why would you want to live far away from the bathhouse? What? It's like living next to the Snif B'nai Akiva. You want to take a nap on Shabbos afternoon? You don't want to live next to the Snit B'nai Akiva. Almanat sheyesh lo bat o shifcha. We saw this already. On the condition that he has a daughter or a female servant, migudelet, which I'll say here means an adult daughter or an adult servant. But we saw last time that it might mean something else. Right? It might mean a specific type of servant, or whatever it is, but we'll get to that. Ve'en lo. On the condition he has no children, and it turns out that he does. You can understand somebody entering a marriage would want to know in advance whether or not there's, like, suddenly she's not only becoming a wife, but she's becoming the stepmother. You can understand that would be a...
Yichud is also a problem.
No, there are all types of reasons you might not want stepchildren. Yichud is one of them, but there's probably 10 other considerations to take into effect when you're getting married in a second marriage, before that.
Inheritance options.
The complications of merging families is, not just in our modern world. You know, there's a reason that the wicked stepmother is a trope in literature.
It worked on the Brady Bunch.
Yes, only on the Brady Bunch did it work out.
And it went with it.
In all of these cases, if after which she says, but in my heart, I would have married him anyway. He said he was a villager, turned out he was there. He said he was a kohen, turned out he was a Levi. I don't care, I would have married him anyway. Nevertheless, V'chein hi shehita'ato. And the same thing in the other direction. If she deceives him, or she misleads him, or there's a mistake about her conditions.
That's very interesting. Not, that she would have married him anyway.
The conditions are met. If he makes the condition that I,
yeah, perhaps she is right. Ariat, definitely al b'tanai she'at.
She was hoping that he would be something, and she didn't state it. Then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing here. It goes, doesn't matter what the direction is.
Yeah. Now the Rambam. You see, the first word in the Mishnah is almanat, and there's that little chet. You know what that is, yes? That's a reference to the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, on the upper right-hand corner, on the upper outside margin of the Gemara. You see that? We don't always talk about the things on the side. The upper is the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, which is a cross-referencing system from the Gemara to the halachic literature, principally to the Shulchan Aruch and to the Rambam.
And the
Bahari. Sometimes the Bahag, other things, but principally to the Tur, Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam. So you see the Chet, there's two different numbering systems. There's a consecutive numbering system, and then there's a numbering system that restarts on each daf. Each daf always starts with Aleph, because otherwise it gets to be too many over the course of a Perek. But then there's the consecutive numbering system. But you see on the upper right-hand side, it says the first thing is Tzadi Chet, then Tzadi Hei, then Tzadi Vav, Tzadi Zayin. Then you see it says Kuf Bet, mm-hmm. And nobody ever uses that referencing number. Nobody ever uses that referencing number, Kuf Bet. But you see next to the Kuf Bet, there's a little Chet, right? Right?
Okay, yeah.
The Chet is what interests us, because that's what corresponds to the Chet in that superscript in at the first word of the Mishnah. You see it says Mem Yud Yud. That's Maimonides. It's odd, right? But it saves space. You see, there's very little space there, right? So Mem Yud Yud takes less space than writing Rambam, right? Maimonides, Sham, Ibid. Where was Ibid? So you have to go back to Zion before it. Maimonides, Sham, Ibid. Go back to Vav. Maimonides, Sham, Hey. Dalet Sham, Gimel Sham, Bet Sham, Aleph Maimonides, Perek Chet, Pei Chet, Chapter 8, Mihilchot Ishut. And in our case, it's Halacha Aleph, right? You know what Sham means. You know what Ibid means, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in other words, because there's very little real estate here on the page, and the typesetters had to fit those little letters in very small, so they have this system of abbreviations. So this is the Rambam in Hilchot Ishut. The laws of Hilchot Ishut is basically about the laws of marriage. Meaning the laws of affecting marriage, not the laws of how to treat your wife or the laws of sexual relations. Right? It's about the laws of affect. So it's Kiddushin, what we call Kiddushin. Right? And in the Tet Vav Shin Ayin, Tur, the Shulchan Aruch, Sham, Sif Kaf Dalet. Where's Sham? So go back. Sham, 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 Sham. Evan Ha'ezer, Simin Lamed Chet. Right? Which is also about Ishut. It's also about Kiddushin. And there, the Shulchan Aruch, but more importantly, the Rambam, basically cuts and pastes our Mishnah, but makes two significant changes. One is, it specifies, like we had mentioned earlier in the Gemara, when we saw this case of the Bat Megudelet, or the Shifcha Megudelet, that it might mean a specific type of servant. You remember that was a hairdresser. Mm-hmm. A woman might not want to have a live-in hairdresser, because the hairdresser is a byword for a gossip. I told the story of our mother-in-law's cleaning lady who would go from Jewish house to Jewish house in Riverdale spreading the news.
She's living in the same house.
It was before the invention of the internet. A greater source of
internet. Even in the invention of internet, there's a certain kind of gossip. I mean, if you're a celebrity out at a club, when you do something embarrassing, that's what the internet is for. There's a certain type of gossip, the gossip of like shul ladies in a Jewish community which still doesn't live online. It lives in whispers over the Kiddush, or, you know, because you say an indiscreet word to the cleaning lady who brings it to the next house and so on and so forth. I think. I don't know. So the Rambam says it's this specific type of live and help. This hairdresser, and the Rambam adds the idea of a baker. So I didn't mention this to my wife. But somehow the bakers also, because how did the bakers work? There were communal ovens, right? In other words, people may have had a hearth at home where they cook things, but a baker's oven has to be much, much, much hotter, which means it requires a lot more fuel. And it was to do home baking, to bake a challah, right? To bake flatbread is easy. You don't need that much heat, right? Every kid that goes to a bonfire makes pita right there on the tabun, right? You take a wok, you turn it upside down, you put it over hot coals, you can bake flatbread. But to bake bread with yeast, you need a much hotter oven. It's not economical to do that at home when you have to heat the oven with your own fuel,
The houses could catch fire.
Could be, but it's just not economical because the amount of wood you have to burn to get to the heat to bake two challahs for Shabbos, yeah. Right? It's just, so there were communal ovens. And the communal ovens, once you get it up to that heat, it stays hot for very, very long. And a lot of people and it's bigger and it's, yeah. And that was, you know, this is the whole thing with the chulent pots. You know, and you're this whole thing with the chulent pot, you know, everybody would bring their chulent pot with a cover and you would tie the chulent pot in a specific way so that nobody would, you know, take the flunkin out of your chulent pot, and you would take it to the communal bakery, and you would, before Shabbos, you would leave, and then on Shabbos morning, everybody would go and collect their chulent pot and bring it home. So you can understand why a baker, you know, who's at the center of a center of a communal gathering of women. She had like this idea of like a, what's that word? A coven, right? You know, like this idea that there's like, you know, there's like a certain kind of like, she's a connect. Today we call those people influencers or connectors, but then they were called yentas. You know, what's a yenta, right? That's the proper Talmudic phrase for what these women may have been. So the Rambam says a baker or a hairdresser. And the Rambam adds one thing that's not in our Mishnah. Of all these conditions that a husband might say to his prospective bride, on the condition that I'm a Levi, on the condition that I have a house in the city, on the condition that I live near the bathhouse, on the condition that, what else is here? No. Or that I, whatever it is, everything or the opposite. What's the one, that I have children, that I don't have children, that I have a servant, that I don't have a servant. What's the one thing the Mishnah doesn't mention, but the Rambam does add it? No, that was the last Mishnah, Harayani Ashir.
I haven't seen the Rambam here in the quote of our consults.
So you're cheating?
I'm researching.
He's preparing, like, you know, one step ahead. He's, yeah. So okay, you prepared in advance. We don't think of this because it's far into our experience.
It's in the wife.
Yeah. In other words, imagine you get married. He says, "Honey, I love you. Let's get married. Here's a chuppah, here's a ring, Ariat Mikudeshet Li." He takes her home and she discovers he's already got a wife. Because in the days when polygamy was still permitted, you could have such a thing. Don't you think he might have mentioned that? Don't you think that's something that he might have slipped his mind?
It might have put her off.
It might have put her off. Or interestingly, the Rambam says more the opposite. If he says, "I have another wife," and it turns out he doesn't, that also cancels the thing. Why? Some women might, why? Right? The other wife, she's in charge of the cooking and cleaning. Or she's in charge of some of his other needs. Right? And the point is that all of these things, they're ekroni, right? The opposite, you know, is enough to cancel a thing. Even if she says, "I would have married him anyway. I would have married him even if I'd known that." I mean, this is probably true. This is probably true for all of us, right? There are things that your wife didn't know about you that I mean, you wouldn't have lied to her in advance, but neither did you volunteer the information about your bad habits, about your whatever. And my father grew up, my parents have been happily married for 57 years, more, going on 58 years. But my father grew up with his bubby at home. Like until he was like in his 20s and Bubby was still cutting up his food for him. Right? And he would take his shirt off and drop it on the floor. And before it hit the ground, Bubby was there and whisked it off to the laundry where it was washed, dried, ironed, folded, and put back, you know, on top of the pile for the morning. And he thought this all just happened by magic. There was some alchemy in the house that made all of this happen.
What?
Well, they got married, my parents, and he had a rude awakening. You've met my mother, right? So he first week they're married, like this dirty laundry is on the floor. She takes it, she throws it outside. She taught him right away. She probably would have married him anyway, even if she'd known about his. And now he's fastidious. She whipped him into shape. But, you don't always know everything before you go to the chuppah. And you then that's...
Now you're talking. All these cases here, I mean, is it... I mean, you know, maybe they're bringing cases because it's, common to have these likely scenarios. But in essence, aren't we just talking about any kind of condition that isn't fulfilled? Would be, I mean, you know, so then
so,
the Rambam could add something? It doesn't matter.
We'll see. The Gemara adds other things. And obviously, usually when the Mishnah makes a list of examples, the question is this an exclusive list or are these exemplary cases from which you can extrapolate?
You'd imagine that any kind of condition would potentially create a problem with Ketubah. We're not talking about a very serious
issue. We saw in the last, there were certain things where...
But that's not almanach. With the almanat, these are things that, you know, these are examples where it's not, there's no potential advantage. You can't guarantee there's an advantage.
Well, the advantage is not, it's in the financial case, right? The financial case. So we say that generally speaking, it's a mekach tot.
Right, but that was not a almanat. It was, I happen to give you something and you can decide we're going to do it. This is like, I'm marrying you because you're limiting the potential.
Yeah, because it's based on a falsity. Right, I mean, there's just certain things that I mean, not to compare the cases, but if a man and woman stand under the chuppah, and everything is kosher bosher, and the rabbi is choshev rov, and the edim couldn't be more kosher, and the ketubah is written very nicely, and there are no mistakes in it, and the ring is certainly a shavet pruta, right? And he says hariat mekudeshetli, and he gives it to her, but it turns out that she's his half sister. Right. So, what do we call that?
Nothing.
It's just not. It's not a marriage. It's not. It's halachically meaningless, right? It's a halachically meaningless act. So, if I say you could, there are other ways to create a halachically meaningless act. One of them is to attach a false condition under certain types of false conditions, right? So the Gemara says, "Hahu gavra." Certain fella, the Gemara now goes right to left field. We leave Kedushin immediately to look at a parallel case and then try to learn from that back to this case of Kedushin. Hahu Gavra, certain fella, the Zabin, what? Abba Bidrezuze, Chavgat, the Zabin Linichse, Adate, Lamesek, La Eretz Yisrael. Certain fellow sells his property. Was going on aliyah sale. What?
People said that they use the proper Aramaic in Chadgadia because here it means mocher and it's Chadgadia means to buy.
Yeah.
They said it should have been, I don't remember what the proper grammar is in Aramaic, but it hadn't been Zabi.
Well, it's well known, in other words, despite the fact that it's in a form of Aramaic, as you well know, Balashon, Chadgadia is not an ancient text. It's a medieval text probably composed in Germany by people who may not have had a PhD in Aramaic diktuk. Right. So Hahu Gavra, the Zabin Linechse Adate Lemesek Leretz Yisrael. He's going on, we probably all did this. Right, I made aliyah. I had an apartment. It was full of stuff. I wanted to get rid of. I couldn't bring it. right? I wanted to sell all of it because I needed liquid cash to bring with me. You know what they say. You know how to make $1 million. You know how to have $1 million in Israel. Come with $2 million. So I tried to. I didn't come with $2 million. I come with $1 million. I don't think I came with $1,000 in my pocket. But I wanted to liquidate all of my assets to have as much cash as I had. A car. I sold my car. I felt bad. I sold my car to a friend for $500. It was an Oldsmobile. This was in 1994. I think it was a 1982 Oldsmobile. Oh my God. I sold it for $500. A month later, that car was dead. Right? It affected the friendship. Yeah, I learned from that. You shouldn't sell a car to a friend. I had furniture. I had other things. The only thing I took with me were my clothes and my books.
You didn't have lifts in those days?
Well, I was single and I was young and I was coming to a rented apartment. I didn't have any good furniture. I had the kind of furniture that a single person living in Manhattan had, stuff that I had inherited from my parents' basement.
Nothing you found on the street?
I don't think so. So I had it all from my parents.
Cinder blocks and boards?
I didn't have cinder blocks on boards, but my desk were two filing cabinets with an old door. I had a door that I sanded down and painted, and I put it on two filing cabinets, and it made for a very good impromptu desk. I wrote my master's thesis at that desk. I started teaching, at that desk. Anyway, so you sell yourself. Then what happens? Not everybody's as fortunate as us around the table, right? Some people make plans to come in Aliyah, and it doesn't work out. So he sells his property. He sells his property. Uva'idna dezavin lo amar velo mide. But when he makes this sale, he didn't say a word. He says, "You want to buy my car? Oldsmobile, 1982. You say, "Fine. Here's money. Here's the keys. Gesundheit." I didn't say, "I'm selling this to you on the condition that I'm making Aliyah. I'm selling this to you because I'm making Aliyah." Right? We don't talk about Aliyah. Right? A going out of business sale. Right?
Your stores do it every week.
Right?
Same store.
But you don't, but you know, I'm selling you something. I don't make a condition of it. But then what happens? Omar Rava, Have Dvarim Shebalev. Dvarim Shebalev, Einam Dvarim. This is a principle across Shas. That matters in your private matters, things that you keep hidden in your heart, are of no consequence. Dvarim shebelev, words in your heart, einam dvarim, are not words. So they can't. You can't say, my Aliyah plans fell apart. I'd like my car back. Now, obviously, if you give me my car, I have to give you the money back. I can't get it for free. But do I have a claim on that car? Because it was kind of conditioned that I'm selling it because I'm going on Aliyah. And since I didn't go on Aliyah, I sold you all this inventory on the cheap because we were going out of business. And then at the last minute, we're not going out of business. No, unless I make it explicit, Dvarim Shebalev, Einam Dvarim.
In the last Mishnah, we could see Av Natshani Tzadik.
Yeah.
Shema Hirvelev, Tupad Libo.
That is interesting. Right. That is interesting.
Well, that was
no, except, confirms it except
no, because we don't know. Because it could be that he did it. We don't say we know that he did it.
But there's a difference because there it's not a sale, right? In other words, it's conditional upon the possibility that I am not as I appear, that my status before God is I am not a rasha, but I am a tzaddik. In a binary world where you're either a Russia or you're a tzaddik. And all it would take to get you to jump from one side of that dividing line to the other is hirurei tshuva, or in the opposite case, hirurei avodah zarah. But here we're conditioning this sale, or we're not conditioning the sale, right? In his mind, in his heart, it's conditioned on the fact that I'm selling it because I don't need it anymore because I'm going on Aliyah.
You say that, is that conditional? If you sell a guy, I'm selling the car, I'm going to making Aliyah.
Yeah.
Just because you're not making Aliyah, you have a right.
So that's the question. In other words, if if I had said Beferish, I am selling you this car because I'm going on Aliyah, and then I don't go on Aliyah, so at least then there's a half a mina that I can...
No, not because I am. That's your problem. It's on condition.
Okay. Well, it's not clear.
This is why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it.
Right. In other words, is there a real difference between because I'm going on Aliyah or on condition I'm going on Aliyah? On condition is certainly more legal language. Yeah. Right?
You made a statement that that's the reason why you're selling.
Right. But the question of can I cancel, can I retract the sale? Can I retract the sale based upon, normally speaking, you can't retract the sale, right? Unless there was a mekach tod, right? So the question is this conditional? Hold on.
I'm selling this car because my wife doesn't like it. Turns out later she decides she likes it.
This could be like an episode of a sitcom.
But that, you can't cancel the sale because of that. That's your problem. It's your wife's problem.
Yeah.
Says you.
And unconditioned okay. That sounds like...
Where does Rava get this idea? That Dvarm Shabalev Einam Dvarm. Mashal Ma Devar Dome. How does this relate to our Mishnah?
You don't know what's in someone's mind.
How does it relate to our Mishnah?
If he didn't say anything, then maybe it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
The Mishnah only applies if he says it with Farish. If he didn't say it with Farish, then apparently it would be okay. And that's the Mishnah would support that idea.
Who else has Dvarim Shebelev? Who else has Dvarim Shebelev in our Mishnah? The woman. The woman says, if I had known he was mere Levi, I would have married him. That's Dvarim Shebelev. And those are inconsequential. If he says to her, if at the chuppah, he says, Hari at me kudeshet li b'tznai shani kohen. And she says, even if you're a Levi, even if you're a Yisrael, even if you're, right? And then it turns out Taka, he's a Levi. So then what would you say?
I think it should be because
they're married.
That mistama should be good. Because she makes it clear, she makes it clear that the Tanai is not Hechrachi. She doesn't say anything. And later she says, well, I would have said that. That's
the condition was important to him and not to her.
Yeah, exactly.
What the condition was.
And that, I'm getting married because I'm a Kohen.
Yeah.
So he's not a Kohen. He doesn't care. But that's why I got married. Or whatever condition.
Right, what's the scenario that it was important for him to marry her because he's a Kohen?
So what are the conditions? Somehow the condition affected his decision to get married, not hers, if it's to accept it.
That's not entertained by the Gemara.
Okay.
So the Gemara asks, the last line.
That seems strange. So perhaps he's a Kohen, and he lives in the boonies, and all the marriageable Jews are divorcees. Okay?
Oh.
Except for one woman. Okay? Now, he's not sure that he's a Kohen. So he says, okay.
I'm
selling for you because I'm a Kohen. Oh, I'm not a Kohen. I'm not going to sell for
you. Look, by the way, we know people like this. We know, I know, I have friends who are Kohanim who got divorced. Happens every place in the world. Wants to get remarried. So a divorcee who's a little bit older. Maybe has kids, maybe doesn't, you know. He's already, like, meaning he's in the Shidduch world, he's already in a different market, right? Very often, people looking for a second marriage, who are they set up with?
Divorcees.
Divorcees. There are many more. In our world, thank God today, there are many more divorcees in their 30s and 40s than there are widows and widowers, Baruch Hashem, right? People aren't widowed that often in their 30s and 40s these days. So automatically, he's swimming in a pool. Not that he goes swimming, you understand. He's swimming in a pool with a lot of divorcees, right? It limits his options if he's a Kohen and he's not going to marry a divorcee.
Find a widow in her 30s.
Or a woman who's never married, or a younger woman who's happy to marry an older man who has children. But, you know, this all makes it more... more complicated. Okay, anyway, so manale le Rava. What's his, where does he get this idea that Dvarim Shebelevinam Dvarim? Saha ilema meha ditnan, skip, turn the page, top of Daf Nun Omad Aleph, yakriv oto. Now this, we went from home plate to left field, and from left field, now we're going up to the bleachers where they're selling the popcorn. Karbonos. Beginning of Sefer Vayikra. Vayikra el Moshe ve'daber v'chulei mo'al mo'ed. Daber el b'nei Yisrael ve'amarta aleihem. Adam, ki yakriv mikem korban lashem mina behema, mina tzon, mina bakar, mina tzon, takrivu oto karbanchem. When a person wants to make a korban from one of these animals, when a person, let's read between the lines, when a person makes a neder that he's going to make a korban, im ola korbano min habakar zechar tamim yakrivenu apetach el moed yakriv oto lirtzono lifnei Hashem. When a person makes a neder to bring a korban, he brings it from, you know, one of these animals, and he makes a korban lirtzono of his own free will. So it's redundant. What do you have to say? When he wants to bring a korban, he brings a korban of his own free will. It could have just said, when he wants to bring a, when he makes a neder to bring a korban, he brings it of his own free will. Right? So the Gemara says, yakriv oto melamed shekofin oto, you can force him. When a person makes a neder, he's going to bring a korban, people make all types of promises. But nidarim, you remember nidarim? We learned nidarim. A person makes a neder, he's going to do something. It's an obligation, right? It's not just something he said he might do, he'd like to do. Who knows? He could do it. He could, right? Well, I mean, life is full of such things. But if you say, I make a neder, I'm bringing a korban, you got to do it. So what if he's lazy? What if he doesn't do it? You can force him to do it.
The time of
some carbon out there. Yeah, but generally speaking, yachol bal korcho, and you can even do it against his will. Talmud lomar lirtzono. No, but it has to be of his own free will. So how can you force somebody to do? How do you force somebody to do what he wants to do?
Yeah, the same thing,
it's a parallel idea to the get. You force him until,
yes,
you whack him a couple times until he says, all right, I give it, I'll do it. What?
Well, that's not good enough. I want to do it.
But really, what's he saying?
Stop hitting me.
So, what's he saying in his heart?
Ah, there's a pintel yid.
No, so that's, you're already jumping into the Rambam. You're already jumping to the Rambam, even though you're putting Yiddish words into the Rambam's mouth. No, so there's really...
What's in your heart?
What do you have to do when you bring a korban?
Your free will.
You have to want to do it. What do you have to do when you give a get? You have to want to do it, right? So here we whack you a couple good times.
Want to. You just have to say, I want to.
So he says, I want to do it.
It's not his
but heart. What's so obvious in his heart? His mouth is saying what?
I want to, but it doesn't.
But his heart is saying,
leave me alone.
Stop hitting me.
But
Dvarim Shebalev, Einam Dvarim. Now, Vladimir reminds us what the Rambam says, that what he says is what's true. Because people want to do the right thing. That's the pintel yid, right?
Well, we could also hypothetically be kofim somebody to do something they don't want to do. I mean, it isn't the right thing. I mean, you could say someone, you know, would have validity.
So,
if a bunch of like, thugs kind of force someone to do something, and then
right. So look, in other words, you're supposed to be harig val yavur for avodah zara, let's say. We can imagine scenarios in Jewish history in which a person was beat and oppressed and tortured until they did avodah zarah, right? But in their heart, what did that Jew say? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What?
I know there's a piece of stone in here.
So obviously, Kofinot Ha'achi Amarotzani only flows in one direction. When the thing that we force him to do is the thing that he knows he has to do, or the thing which is to his advantage, such as fulfilling an obligation. Right? It's to this fellow's advantage to bring the korban.
Boy, how do we hold in the case that you just gave of the person who was forced to?
So that's not to his advantage. So therefore, we might say that's not the real him.
That person doesn't have to die. He could just do his heart.
It's the person's already done it. If somebody has a gun to his head and he does avodah zarah, right, insincerely in his heart, right? So Yahar Gval Yavor is only a lechatchila halacha.
So in other words, what a person could say to himself, instead of being killed for this, I'm just going to say in my heart what I really believe, so I don't need to be killed for this.
In other words, the halacha is that it should be Yahar Gval Yavor. I don't judge anybody who finds a way out of that. But
it's only one direction. But how can you learn from it? Because there we have questions.
We haven't yet brought this back to. We went from marriage to mechira, from mechira to karbonos, to being forced to bring a to fulfill a neder. Okay, we'll come back. This next week is not yet Hanukkah.
Yeah.
So next week we'll have Shir, and we'll have to figure out what's happening during Hanukkah.
Thank you. Mm.